Welcome back to another episode of Winning Through Culture. I am Tim Flanagan. I am here with our special guest today, Jared DeSantis, who we'll introduce here in a moment. Many people may not know that October is Financial Planning Awareness Month. And while there's never a wrong time to review your financial situation, October is an ideal time with the holidays and the new year approaching. So today on Winning Through Culture, Jared DeSantis and I will talk about the importance of financial planning and how that drives businesses and organizational cultures. Jared is Regional Director of Advice and Financial Planning at MassMutual and joins us today live in our studio from Florida. Jared, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim, for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. It's been a couple of months since I've actually been up here to Charlotte.
Wow, it's good to have you back. Before we kind of get into our discussion, I'd love for you to just share with our listeners a little bit more about your background and kind of your professional journey.
Sure. So I actually started in the industry 16 years ago. I started out at Ameriprise Financial. My first year as an advisor was in Fort Myers, Florida.
Okay. Nice place to be.
Yeah, it wasn't absolutely not a terrible place to be. But that was right around the Great Recession when it started.
Yep.
And so at the end of my first year, I was kind of panicking internally. And I said, well, you know what? I need to join a large practice, or I need to learn from somebody else that's been doing this for a little while. So I ended up joining a practice with another advisor that was the same age as me, but she had been in the business about 3.5 years. And we ended up taking that practice and building it to 300 ongoing planning relationships. We had about a 98% renewal rate. We were managing about $330 million in assets. And we were a fairly small team, depending on the year. It was between 4 to 6 individuals. She was the lead advisor that I worked with. My role was to help service those households, increase sales. So on the sales side of things, manage the operations and run the team, as well as, you know, help her market and grow the business. So I wore a lot of different hats, was client facing for those 11 years. And two of my coworkers had transitioned over here to MassMutual. And one of those coworkers is the head of financial planning. The other is my leader. They recruited me for this position, and I've been in this role for about 5 years. So don't look back. It's been a heck of a journey. I've learned a lot, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, we appreciate working with you. So today, as I mentioned, we're going to dive into the importance of financial planning and the impact that could have on organizational cultures. I think anytime you have a conversation, Jared, about financial planning, a incredibly important aspect is often overlooked. I am fond of saying in the financial services profession, the term financial planning may be the most overused, abused, and misunderstood word in the profession. So let's level set if we could. Why don't you describe from your lens, what is financial planning for a client? And then that'll give us the context for the rest of our discussion.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of different ways that we could describe planning. But from my context, there is planning and there's not planning, right? Mm-hmm. There's foundational strategies, which is where I think a lot of people get caught up. It's where we look at an individual opportunity to help a client, right? Mm-hmm. Very basic planning. But what our standpoint planning is a fee-based relationship that's based on advice and guidance that focuses on helping clients make smarter decisions and avoid a lot of common mistakes. It revolves around accountability, guidance, education, wisdom, sharing your expertise, and collaborating with those clients to ultimately make those smarter decisions. And it's usually based around a consistent ongoing service model, right? So the advice and guidance isn't based on the deliverable. Not that the deliverable is not important, but that deliverable is more for us as the planner to help you make more informed decisions that will impact your financial well-being. But the real value comes from the ongoing advice, right? Meeting consistently to cover certain themes that are based on not only your phase of life, whether you're an accumulator, a pre-retiree, or retiree, but also based on certain intricacies that we have to worry about each and every year to ensure that we make the best possible decisions.
Okay. So it's advice and guidance on a more holistic basis versus just an individual strategy or idea.
Yep.
Financial idea or product for that matter that somebody should purchase. So it's that ongoing advice and guidance model where there's an advisor giving the client advice and guidance, helping that client make good, smart financial decisions about their present and future financial situation.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You nailed it.
All right. So one of the topics that we're going to tackle today is the intersection of finances mm-hmm. and corporate business organizational health. So what advice, Jared, would you give a company leader, HR professional that is looking to incorporate financial planning initiatives into their organization as an effort to help address their employees' overall well-being?
Okay. There's a lot of opportunity there to really help HR professionals because there's some misconceptions about what's currently being offered through their employer-sponsored benefit programs, right? Mm-hmm. And we'll talk more about that here in a moment. But what I can say is that there's a recent study that's out there. It's conducted by MetLife. It's about 33 pages long and has a variety of useful information for HR professionals to really assess what employees want and how it impacts them. One of the main things that jumped out at us is that financial stress really affects productivity. What they found in the study last year was that 85% of the employees say finances are a top source of stress for them now and in the future. And about 27% of those employees say they're less productive at work because of that financial worries, right?
It's a large percentage of the workforce, one out of four. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you think about the benefit packages that most people offer or most employers offer, right? It covers mental health benefits, covers your physical wellness benefits. Mm-hmm. What it's lacking is the financial wellness benefits. And if you're thinking about a three-legged stool, you really need all three of those for somebody to have holistic wellness, right? So I think you can create a happier, less stressed, and more focused organization when all three legs are firmly planted on the ground.
Yeah, it's definitely a topic. I think there's been so much emphasis on employee healthcare benefits and, you know, an emerging focus on supplemental benefits in order to be competitive as an employer. And yet the overarching theme of somebody's financial well-being kind of gets lost in all of that. So let's dive in a little deeper in the sense, Jared, that one of the topics we cover on this podcast is a lot is just dealing with multi-generational workforce. To your point, you have people in accumulation phase, some of whom are trying to get out of debt before they can accumulate. Mm-hmm. You have pre-retirees, and then you have people going into retirement. How can financial planning initiatives at a workplace manner be tailored to meet the diverse needs of a multi-generational workforce?
From our perspective, I really think that when you look at those three phases of life, we can approach it in two different manners. One of these could be from a high-level education perspective, mm-hmm. right? Customizing seminars on some type of reoccurring basis that are tailored toward each of those phases in life. So I'll give you some examples, right? For accumulators, they may be interested in seminars that help them, like you said, how do we save appropriately? How much should I be saving on a regular basis, right? How do I create a budget, manage that student loan debt? You know, there's an enormous amount of the workforce right now that has crushing amount of student loan debt. Mm-hmm. How do we manage that? How do we handle short and long-term financial goal settings, protection strategies, right? Managing investments or even college planning for their kids. Right? That's what's important at the beginning of phase of life. So you could host a seminar, let's say once a quarter, covering one of those topics. But what you need to do to host these seminars is really partner with a trusted financial planner that can deliver that level of education and literacy. And then we could talk some more about the other ideas for your pre-retirees or retirees if you'd like me to share some ideas and thoughts there.
Yeah, why don't you? I think that's a good idea because, again, a multi-generational diverse workforce. You know, as an employer, business owner, you're really trying to address a variety of different needs and wants in your employee workforce space. So touch on those if you would.
Sure. So as we start to transition out of that accumulator phase into the pre-retiree phase, people become more interested in learning about, let's say, estate planning, obviously planning for retirement. Not that we haven't been planning for retirement our whole lives.
Saving for retirement, maybe, but not planning for how that's going to go.
Exactly, right? So planning for retirement. Tax efficiency, understanding Social Security a little bit better. Not that they're mm-hmm. going to be taking those benefits now, but it is something to think about how they can be impacted in the future based on our decisions we make today. And then, of course, exiting the workforce. At some point, we're all going to exit the workforce, whether it be on our terms or God's terms. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen. So as we start to approach that phase, that third phase of our life, we need to have a firmer understanding of mitigating retirement risks, right? Generating income through various sources, maximizing Social Security. How do we manage the Medicare benefits? It's very confusing, right? For a lot of people, charitable giving, long-term care, all of those things become more important as we begin to exit or do exit the workforce.
Yeah, there's a lot that can be covered. And your suggestion is really starting with education in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. I would say that's where we want to begin at a high level, is to incorporate some type of seminar series that's tailored to each phase of life. But we do need to go a little bit deeper. This isn't personalized enough to truly help and impact an individual's financial well-being in the manner that it probably deserves.
Okay. You mentioned this study that MetLife did. So the fact that they did a study means they saw some trend, right? Why do you think financial planning is becoming increasingly important in the formation of workplace culture today?
Absolutely. Well, when we look at the research that they've done this for a number of years now. Somebody shared this with me.
So there's trends.
Yeah, 1 or 2 years ago. And unfortunately, it's not trending in the best direction from a concern standpoint, right?
Got it. So the concern level's going up.
It is. I think the research captures that there's a profound impact on concerns about an economic slowdown, higher inflation. You've all seen it when you go to the grocery store or at the pump. And workers are seeing that. So 55% of the workers that were surveyed, they're living paycheck to paycheck, which is up 12% from 2022.
Wow. It's a big jump.
Yeah.
In a short period of time.
43% last year, 55% this year.
Wow.
And also, you've got, I mean, this is an astounding number, 90% of the employees surveyed were worried about inflationary pressures and rising costs of living. So the proportion of those employees fearing the loss of the value of their savings is up 15 percentage points since last year. And then when you look at the concerns about their ability to pay down debt, that's up 14 percentage points year over year.
Those are big jumps in 1 year. This is an interesting study. I'm going to have to read this.
Yeah.
It's alarming, actually.
It is alarming, right? And Jason Goldie actually shared with me a study from another organization that has very similar alignment in certain things that we'll discuss throughout today.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess so many things that are happening with companies' workforce is becoming an issue every company has to deal with. And this is an emerging issue, is the financial well-being of employees. For companies that have actually tackled this and put an emphasis on financial planning, financial education, how has that contributed to the overall well-being and happiness of the employees that work for those companies?
Well, when you start to look at the survey, what it cites is that financial education as a way to help the company improve things like morale, reduces turnover, it attracts new talent. I mean, if you have two employers, they have very similar pay scales, very similar benefits, but you're offering, let's say, a legal plan and a financial planning subsidy, where do you think that employee is going to go, or that prospect is going to go? They're going to absolutely go to that other place. But there's a strong correlation when you look at these, the data that I'm mentioning or referring to. There's a strong correlation between employees' financial health and their perceptions of being cared for, right?
Okay.
So workers who feel financially healthy, they're 87% more likely to feel cared for most of the time that they're actually working versus those who are not.
That's a pretty big number.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're twice as likely to feel financially healthy as well.
Wow. So the statistics bear that employees that are in an environment, culture, business that is supporting their financial education and well-being, or the numbers bear out the fact that those people are happier and more engaged.
Absolutely. Those things in the back of our mind that we probably thought were true.
Yeah.
They are true and they're real, right?
Well, I have to imagine then the same study has given us a little bit of an insight into my next question. So for companies that choose not to deal with this, what are the consequences both for the employees and the employers when their employees' financial well-being, financial education is basically neglected or not addressed?
Well, I think what you're probably going to see is that the younger and the lower income workers, they cite not being paid enough. That's the big concern.
Oh, yeah.
Well, part of it is they may not be managing their money as wisely as they could, right?
Yeah.
And it could be from just a lack of education, right? So that's the first thing. They may not realize how much money they're actually making in comparison to what people were making in previous generations, right? So, and they're not spending
more
money.
They care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then
my
now,
experience.
Yeah, or they don't care because they're young.
Yeah.
That's a good point. But with your older workers, they're more likely to cite insufficient retirement savings as a top financial stressor. So you could have sat down with somebody 10 or 15 years ago, helped them save appropriately, and they wouldn't be in that same situation if they had the proper guidance to begin with.
Yeah. I think that's another aspect you've seen historically over the years, is employees that have not saved enough for retirement are much more vulnerable later in their career, and in some cases are trying to hold on to their paycheck in their profession beyond age 65, which in some environments is not even possible today because of mandatory retirement ages and whatnot. So the consequences are as good as the upside is, in essence, Jared, for companies and cultures that do focus on this. The consequences are equally as kind of bad on the other side of that.
Yeah. And I'll also add one other thing is that you look at the impact. Not only does it impact work, but it could bleed into issues at home.
Yeah.
Right? They're going to be less distracted or more distracted, less productive. But the additional stressors because of that financial burden, one of the top 10 reasons for divorce and marital problems is financial problems.
Dad, well, last time I saw it was the number one.
Yeah. I mean, it's up there.
Yeah.
Depending on the study you look at. So why not help save people's marriages and also help them be more productive life and overall?
No, that's true. So do you have any examples of what it would look like to successfully integrate financial planning into a corporate culture? And if you do have some examples, Jared, what the outcomes either have been or could be?
Yeah, I'm going to cover quickly the outcome first, and then we can spend a little bit more time, if that's all right, on what I think a successful financial literacy and education program can look like. There's a lot of options and it's flexible, so it might take a little bit more time.
That's fine.
But what I would recommend is to understand a little bit about the impact that you can have on a person's financial well-being is check out the MetLife study that's out there. It was recently released. It's called The Importance of Holistic Well-Being in a Turbulent Time. So focus on pages 10 and 11. Not that the whole study isn't beneficial, but that really focuses on the financial piece of it.
Okay.
But providing holistic health, which includes financial education, it's going to lead to employees that are 92% more likely to feel engaged at work. They're 65% more likely to be loyal to you. And we all know how expensive turnover is.
Yep.
It's extremely costly. And 56% more likely to be more productive. If you don't have that lingering pain in the back of your mind about your finances, you can focus on getting your job done and doing it.
So higher satisfaction of career, lower turnover, and higher productivity.
Absolutely. Now, leading into the next part of that question that you asked me about was, what does a successful program look like? Well, I think it starts out with, first and foremost, finding a trusted advisor, trusted financial planner that can help your organization start to implement multi-level strategy. The first level is that high-level strategy, right? Which is offering the seminars, right? Yep. Having some type of seminar series. It's easy. It can be done via Zoom. You can do it in person or a combination of both. And you can do it quarterly, monthly, semi-annually, annually. It's up to you. That's the first level. Now, that information isn't going to be specific enough in a lot of cases to make a very personal impact on their financial well-being, right?
So that's just education.
Yeah.
And awareness.
Exactly. Okay. That's a great way to put that. Education and awareness. That's all we're offering there at that point. Now, how do we get deeper and actually collaborate with the employee? So that's where what I would say is having that same advisor in-house or available via Zoom to set up a meeting after that education takes place, right? Because there's going to be some employees that really want to sit down, understand how a financial planner could help them and improve what they've already done and help them avoid common mistakes, as we mentioned earlier. And what normally takes place is you'll sit down with that planner, they'll offer a consultation, and they'll walk you through some type of one-on-one planning. And if it's a good fit, if you're interested in doing that, or if an employee is interested in doing that, that's where the employer could subsidize that cost. Now, these programs, these financial literacy programs or financial education programs are typically pretty flexible. Mm-hmm. What you'll find is if you're working with an advisor that the seminars, there may be a cost to those or they may be free. These programs don't fall under ERISA, right? So the program itself is very flexible, right? Meaning that you can offer a subsidy for financial planning, personal planning at a personal level, right? To an employee. You can offer a subsidy to all of your employees or a certain percentage of employees, depending on your budget. I would recommend offering this to everybody, but you could offer to pay a certain percentage of the financial planning fee.
Okay.
The cost that's typically associated with that advice, deeper level of advice and guidance. You could pay a certain dollar amount. What I would recommend with that is if you're going to subsidize the cost, that there is some type of cost sharing with the employees. And one of the reasons being is that if there is some skin in the game, they're more likely to follow through with that advice and guidance that's offered by the employee or by the financial planner.
So listening to you, I'm a business owner, there's three things that have come up in my mind so far, and I'll tackle them one at a time.
Okay.
Or ask you to tackle them.
Yep.
I have a retirement plan. Aren't they supposed to be doing this?
It's a great way to bring that up. Well, the 401k is all focused on wealth accumulation, right? It's about helping the employee save towards retirement one day, right? That's the main purpose of that. Now, you have a 401k specialist that can help you, but their goal really is to ensure that A, they're saving an amount that they can't afford to save towards that goal. They're at least hopefully saving up to the employer match.
Yep.
And the employer match is nice, but the reality is most people aren't saving enough and the employer match is not enough to actually achieve their goals in retirement, right? But that particular 401k specialist, their sole focus is typically on asset allocation, making sure you're properly allocating the dollars. Now, when we look at financial planning, there's really six key areas to financial planning. And wealth accumulation is one of those, right? But there's a lot of other
areas.
There's
five others.
There's five others, right, that we really need to focus on, and that's not their job.
So if I'm a business owner, the retirement plan I have, the retirement plan provider, that is not financial planning. That is helping people understand how the plan works and how to enroll and where to make some of their investment choices.
Investment choices. All right. Exactly.
Second question. I'm a business owner. I'm listening to this and I'm saying, how do I know that somebody isn't just going to come in and try and sell my people something?
Mm-hmm.
Which does lead me to my third question, if you want me to articulate that now or wait.
Sure.
The third question is, how do I know who's qualified to put in front of my employees to not sell them something and to truly give them advice and guidance, helping them determine what's the right path for them?
Okay. Two great questions. So let's start out with the second question, which is how do we ensure they're not just going to push a product?
Yep.
Right. Well, when you work with an advisor in a planning relationship under a contractual agreement, they're being held to a fiduciary standard.
So I need to work with an advisor that's acting as a fiduciary.
Exactly.
I as the employer, or I as the employer and obviously then for my employees?
Well, if I was a business owner, I certainly would have ensured that I'm working with a financial planner that is being held to fiduciary standards.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
But also I would want my employees to be held to those standards, because when you look at an advisor that's being held to that fiduciary standard, they're going to take an agnostic view of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's not about the products. It's not about the implementation. It's about how do we help them, as I mentioned earlier, make the best possible decision. So they're going to look at everything from financial position planning, risk management, wealth accumulation, tax management strategies, retirement planning, right, estate planning. They're going to take all of that into consideration when they give a suggestion and a recommendation. And it will be based on comprehensive advice. Right. So they're not going to just push a product to get a sale. They're going to recommend a solution that solves for a problem, both short and long term.
Got it. So I need to find somebody that is acting in the capacity of fiduciary. How would I know that as a business owner, that that person isn't just telling me that, but they're actually, are there credentials I should look for? Is there something, you know, that can verify that that is in fact the case?
Definitely. Well, if you have an actual agreement in place that you've signed with that financial advisor, you know that they're being held to a fiduciary standard.
Okay.
Right?
So I would actually sign an agreement that acknowledges that's the standard.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, there are other people that are supposed to operate under fiduciary standard as well. Somebody that is a certified financial planner, right, that holds a CHFC, whereas the AIF designation, I believe.
Yeah, credit and investment. Yep.
Yep. So there's a lot of different organizations outside of just holding a Series 7 license, Series 63, 65, or Series 66 license. There's things above just holding those licenses that ensure that people are actually operating under a fiduciary standard. Because just because you hold certain licenses doesn't mean that you're actually acting as a fiduciary. Somebody may just have a client's best interest in place versus the fiduciary standard.
Okay. So again, cycling through, I'm a business owner listening to this podcast and I'm thinking of different ideas or concerns. So retirement plan provider is really truly helping the employees understand how that plan works and the value of enrolling in it. The financial advisor that we introduce to our employees should be operating as a fiduciary, not coming in to sell a product.
Exactly.
So it's the focus is on advice and guidance, and that advisor should be operating either as a CFP, CHFC, under some fiduciary arrangement that is articulated and shared in writing and signed off on by both that advisor and the client.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I guess the next question I am kind of considering here is I think about, I want to introduce financial well-being literacy into the organization. I want to help my employees make better decisions. And I want to kind of create a culture that fosters that in my organization. What liabilities, if any, do I have by doing this?
Well, if you establish a formal agreement through a properly licensed individual, financial planner, mm-hmm. there should be indemnification for the employer.
Right? Okay.
So you should have a formal agreement in place that renews in perpetuity, similar to an ongoing financial planning relationship that ensures you're protected from any advice that they provide to the employee.
Okay.
So that's one suggestion that I would make, right? That's going to protect you.
Okay.
That's probably the best thing that you could do is have a formal agreement in place that is legally binding.
Got it. Okay. So talked about some really interesting statistics that make a very compelling case mm-hmm. for making sure your employees have access to financial literacy, financial well-being, and ultimately financial planning services through your company.
Mm-hmm.
Talked a little bit about how to identify the right person to work with them. Do you have a recommended kind of model, Jared, as to how this all comes together? Is there anything else I should be considering as a business owner, employer, specific to this topic?
What I would say is something is better than nothing for a start,
yeah.
right? So depending on your budget, if all you can afford to do is to bring in somebody to provide education mm-hmm. at a high level, it's a good place to begin.
Okay.
But what I would highly recommend is to go a little bit deeper, right? To add another arrow to your quiver and consider subsidizing the cost of actual planning of working with an advisor for your employees. They're going to greatly benefit from it based on the numbers we've shared here, the details mm-hmm. we've shared. I think that coupling the educational seminars with one-on-one planning on a year-over-year basis is going to increase the happiness of the employees.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, they're going to be really grateful for you going above and beyond as an employer to offer that a third level of wellness. Like we mentioned, there's physical wellness benefits, mental health wellness benefits. There's financial wellness benefits. Build out that third leg of the stool.
Okay. Yeah. And I think ultimately the value of partially subsidizing the advice and the guidance that they're getting is to encourage them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And to show that you care about them. Obviously, you're going to make that investment in those that actually go through a planning process.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, ultimately your commitment as an employer. So is there any, you know, as we think about this topic, is there anything else, Jared, that kind of you'd give as parting advice to a business owner, an entrepreneur, listening to this podcast on how to tackle this topic?
Well, from an actual business owner's perspective, what I would say is that if you yourself are not working with a financial planner
mm-hmm.
to focus on growing your business and investing back in your business while also focusing on your personal plan, you're missing out on a great opportunity to make a meaningful impact on creating a stronger, more functional organization, right?
Yep.
A third set of eyes overseeing what you're currently doing and how you're managing your dollars from a personal perspective and a business perspective is really necessary to ensure that you create a sustainable business that you can pass on to the next generation.
Yeah. So probably good advice is to start doing this yourself before you encourage your employees to do it.
Yes. So by you going through and interviewing financial planners, you will probably find somebody that you feel comfortable with and you believe in. And if you believe in that person and you trust that person, I think you can also pass on that trust to your employees.
Yeah, which begs another question, Jared. If I don't know anyone, what's the best way to find someone?
All right. So what I would recommend is to actually speak to other professionals you work with. Talk to your attorney, talk to mm-hmm. your CPA, right? Talk to other business owners, talk to your friends, your family, somebody that you go to church with, get their feedback. And I would interview at least 3 people. And if you don't know anybody that actually has a financial planner, mm-hmm. right, that has a close relationship with a financial planner, they've worked with them long-term, you could always go to the CFP board's website and look for a qualified individual there.
Yeah, they have a directory on their website.
Yep. Yeah, or even the CHFC, very similar designations.
Okay. All right. Well, we appreciate time today. Again, October is Financial Planning Awareness Month for businesses that are looking to go a little deeper in creating organizational health and a stronger culture, adding the third leg of the stool of financial wellness and literacy, and ultimately giving your employees access to financial planning advice is definitely an important topic in today's day and age based on where people find themselves financially and what's going on out there. So, Jared, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Tim. I really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you being with us on another episode of Winning Through Culture. Until we are together again, be impactful, be relevant, and be well.